apple butter. So it does that. And I'm actually going to start by saying an apology, first of all. Not to you. It's not to you, Luke. Don't worry. It's an apology. And it's not to Marshall, who's already whimpering. It's a bit more of an apology to everyone because I've not done a podcast in like a month and a bit. And to be honest, that's very intentional. He's doing the sniff at the moment, like he needs to go to the toilet, but I know he's just been to the toilet. Anyway, so I've not done a podcast in a while, and it's kind of been intentional because I needed to have a bit of a break. I had quite a lot going on personally, got very unwell, had to have a minor operation, lots of stuff to deal with, and just decided that the podcast was something that needed to take a bit of a back burner while I was dealing with life. So sorry, I've not done one in a while, but I'm also sorry that my dog is whimpering. On the flip side, I have a good, very interesting guest, Luke, who is, Jesus, my dog. Luke, who is basically like the big boss of Lucky Saint. And if you don't know about Lucky Saint, I actually have a load of it behind me, ironically. Look at this. Look, I have it right in my hand. Ironically, right, in the alcohol cupboard, which does not have much alcohol in it. It has lots of non-alcohol in it. So if you don't know about Lucky Saint, Lucky Saint is basically a 0.5% beer, but you kind of would argue that it is an alcohol-free beer. And I don't really drink. There's several reasons why I don't drink. One of them being that... I used to work in a bar and dealt with a lot of very drunk people, and it really turned me off it. And the other big part of it is, I think it's kind of a mental health thing for me. I don't like me as a drunk person at all. I'm not like particularly rowdy or anything, but I tend to get a bit down and a bit depressed about life when I drink. So it's quite easy for me to cut out. So Lucky Saint, basically, I think it was the first non-alcoholic beverage that I tried that I actually thought tasted good, and that had been the nicest way of wording it, because so many of them taste like shit. And my dog agrees. You can hear him. He agrees with me. And the fact that you've created a beer that tastes good is napple calories, and is actually quite nice to have after a bike ride, for example. To me, it's a great success. And the other thing, I know this all sounds like such a plug, but I thought it'd be really good for us to do a podcast because I think it's interesting and so on topic at the moment with Dry January. The other thing, the packaging is lovely.
Oh, I love it when people notice the packaging, just because it's a really nice way of elevating a really simple product.
Yeah, I won't like explain what it is and how it looks or anything. But if anyone does get themselves a crate ordered, you'll get it. You'll get it when you open it, and you'll understand it. It's just a really lovely little touch.
I think the packaging came from, like, alcohol-free beers just got such a bad... But by the way, thank you for the, like, unbelievably generous and kind introduction. but the packaging came from the idea behind it, and behind, frankly, like, everything that we do is, like, there's such a... Alcohol-free comes from such a much maligned place where everyone thinks it tastes awful, and... it's not a very aspirational purchase. So my headspace on it was always like, everything we've got to do has got to elevate alcohol-free beer above people's expectations. So everything from the packaging to the beer itself to the way that we communicate, everything needs to over-deliver. Overcome these, like, to overcome the preconceptions of what it is as a product and as an offering.
Yeah, and I think it works really well. And I think it's incredibly successful in the sense that, for me, when I worked in design, it was always about you bring people on journey, whether that's product design, retail design, interior design, architecture, and that in a product, that journey is from when it arrives at your house. And if you can create a story to that and make it a real thing, it's like Apple absolutely nailed it. You know, you buy an Apple product, you open it up, and it's just incredibly satisfying. You know, that elevates, that's how Apple can turn around and charge twice as much as pretty much anyone else for, I don't know, a set of headphones, because it's just a very well thought through process. And being able to do that simply in a box is cool. It's really cool. And it was, and even the Christmas card that you sent me was like a little wax seal on the envelope. And I was like,
they're so good. The Christmas cards, I literally love them. It's quite a satisfying, sorry for anyone listening. Like, we do the little, we wax seal the back of the envelope with a stamp. And it's quite a satisfying process. You get a gun with these sticks of wax, and then you carefully stamp the back of them. It's quite cool.
It looks good when you do it as well, and you get a wax seal envelope. You're like, oh, hello. Makes you feel. It's the same.
And then it's just from us.
Yeah, but it was a lovely card as well. It was a really nice. Actually, the actual card was nice. It was on my shelves behind me, so it was it made the good shelf where all the other cards went. So how was it that Lucky Saint all started?
Similar to you in a sense, like I just had this observation that like alcohol-free beer was something I needed in my life, because on paper it's the best proposition in the world for the right time, the right occasion, for the right people. It's like it's an amazing proposition. But the reality was I was nowhere near drinking it.
Yeah.
So I was there, we won't name names, but I was holding a bottle of alcohol-free beer in 2016 and just thinking, like, I don't want that. And I boiled it down to two things. The first was the beer in the bottle wasn't good enough to convince me to join alcohol-free beer and to join the category.
Yeah.
And then there simply wasn't a brand that I bought into that empowered me to kind of like feel good about choosing the decision to drink alcohol-free beer, because we've all done it. Like, we've all apologized for not drinking.
Yeah.
Whether that's the barman when you sort of, sorry, can I have a bottle of Beck's Blue? Or whether it's your mates when you're like, oh, sorry, I'm not drinking tonight, guys. You know, like, and that for me, that's just, you shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
No one should be in a position where they have to kind of like, have to justify or apologize for their decisions around drinking. So that was 2016, and I thought to myself, I wonder how hard it would be to brew a beer that's good enough. And then I guess if I solve that problem, is it possible to build a brand that will make people feel positive about making that decision?
Yeah.
So that was the start point. And then I went on and spent the next 2 years working with six different breweries in three different countries, trying to figure out how to make great tasting alcohol-free beer. So I spent a year in the UK. I worked with four breweries here, and then I went to Belgium, and then ultimately I went to Germany. So it was actually a fun journey. Like, it was a really interesting journey. There were plenty of setbacks and plenty of naysayers, but we got to a good place, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, like 2016, there wasn't really a lot of options out there alcohol-free wise at all. I mean, maybe it had been one or two things that were just a nod to it.
Yeah. So there was basically two. There was Beck's Blue, and there was something called Bavaria 00.
Yeah.
That's basically pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I think it was beginning of 2018, it might have been 2017, but then like Heineken Zero launched.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that really clearly being like, someone's stolen my idea. Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah.
Can't do it anymore. And then you have to try and put the kind of rational hat on, which is to say, actually, no, it's great. Like having big brands normalizing the category is a really good thing.
Yes, exactly. Because
we don't compete with them really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we offer a different quality, and so it's always we sit alongside Heineken in lots of accounts now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the things that I mean, I've definitely noticed that as we said over the last, it feels like the last 2 or 3 years, the market's really changed. Like you actually have. It used to be like you go to the cinema, you go to the supermarket and you there might be like one or two like subtle nods. There's now an aisle.
Yeah.
You know, there's now an aisle which will have it in most supermarkets. And that might, you know, instead of having one offering, they might have 20 offerings, 10 or 20 offerings. And it definitely feels like there's a bit of a shift in the mentality behind alcohol-free beer or low alcohol beer and spirits. You know, we'll class anything in this kind of topic. It definitely feels like there's a somewhat shift in it now, which is great.
Definitely. I've noticed a huge difference, like from the point of launch where, I mean, so I spent really like the first 18 months. So we launched in October 2018, spent the first 18 months, working in hospitality, selling to bars, pubs, restaurants. And for every advocate and like fan that we met and who listed our product, there was also at least one, you know, a manager or whatever in a bar who's just like, I don't see the point. Like people come here to drink. Like I've no interest in, you know, I've no interest in even like serving this product.
Today
that's just, I mean, that's kind of transformed today to the it's become like much more mainstream and much more accepted, and now, you know, people like the on-trade like hospitality are embracing it and putting a great range of products in, and for me that's like the really important bit. I don't know what you find, Chris, but like I don't drink, I haven't really drunk for the last 4 years. And the hardest thing is when there aren't good options.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
That it's the, like, I don't struggle, so, you know, I've got over the social crutch of alcohol and I don't find that challenging. But if I'm in a pub and I get offered, they've got like a really, really bad selection.
Yeah,
and that's the bit, that's when it becomes really hard.
Yeah, exactly. I completely get that. I think for me the problem always was that I'm vegetarian as well. Going to a restaurant, I would always pre-look at menus to know what offerings there are for being vegetarian, because sometimes you go to places and there's one choice and it's like, yeah. I don't even like whatever that one choice is, you know. And the more variety that starts to get there, like it used to be, you know, I think as you say, like 2015, 2016, there'd be one or two options, and then your choice is soft drinks. So, you know, Coca-Cola, Red Bull, whatever it is. And that was kind of it. But there is something about the social element of having a beer, be it alcohol free or whatever, with your mates. And because I don't know, I think there was initially, I don't really give a monkey's now, but there was always like, you ordered a Coca-Cola and you felt like you were being a bit judged. And it was a bit like, oh, he's having a Coke again, you know. But on the flip side, you know, because there being more things available that are alcohol free, you're still kind of, you know, you're having something that's very similar still in flavor to what everyone else is having. And I think people just are a bit less judgy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I love this idea. We all spend loads of time kind of thinking about this, but our relationship as a society with alcohol goes back like several millennia.
Yeah.
You know, they were brewing thousands and thousands of years ago, they were brewing beer in Egypt.
Yeah.
And actually, you go back, there were the festivals of drunkenness in Egypt, all the way through to like the modern day, where the way we celebrate is by raising a glass of champagne.
Mm.
So all of these, all like alcohol is so entwined in modern society, and particularly within socializing.
Mm.
You know, all our social occasions are around sharing food and drink.
Yeah.
And that's the norm. And I love this idea of how quickly that's now changing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the like just challenging that tradition, we've, you know, the greatest reward of drinking, I think, is the social connection.
Yeah.
It's not the alcohol part. And we can still do all of the social connection. We can still enjoy all of that. Mm. So it's cool just watching it play out, how it's unfolding.
And I mean, to be, you know, also I guess for you, you're basically on the front line of that. You're seeing it more so than a lot of people, being a brand that's so, you know, focused around that side of it and the social connection side of it, definitely. Now, something else, why low alcohol and not alcohol free? Because people have asked me this as well. And an example is my partner's sister is pregnant. And I think I might have even told you this before. I had some. I went away for a weekend. My sister's partner turned up. They were gone. And I was like, she's pregnant. I wonder if that's an issue. Apparently, it's like low alcohol is fine within, obviously, in moderation. But how come 0.5%, not 0%? And is there actually anything that is 0% apart from Coca-Cola?
I guess there's a couple of things. So one very active decision to be at 0.5 and not at zero.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like, this is all about achieving the best tasting product. Like alcohol-free beers is tiny, like, you know, in essence, like, no, hardly anyone drinks it. And the biggest challenge is perceptions of taste.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want, we want as many people to come in and enjoy alcohol-free beer as possible. The main way we do that is with the best possible product.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't achieve as good a product at 0.0 as we could at 0.5.
Okay.
And then the UK is a real anomaly globally, because actually anything up to 0.5 globally is considered alcohol free.
Yeah.
So there's more alcohol in a ripe banana is our favorite snippet on this.
Yeah.
Soy
sauce is
there's natural. Yeah, and vinegar, like basically anything fermented.
Yeah.
Down to soda bread, sauerkraut, kombucha. There's trace levels of alcohol in so many foodstuffs, but we don't worry about it. And the reason there's a threshold at 0.5 is because that's where your body metabolizes the alcohol faster than you can drink it. So the alcohol can't build up in your bloodstream, so it can't have an impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. Yeah, the rest of the world has normalized around 0.5, whereas the UK we're actually working with the government and with some of the trade associations to create clearer guidance on this, because it's a bit of there's lots of confusion with it.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I honestly don't think it, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't make a difference, but I know people who see that and they're like, but then it's not alcohol free. And then there's that argument of like, no, there's more, you get more alcohol in a loaf of bread, or as you say, a banana, or as I mentioned, soy sauce was one that my partner was telling me about, that soy sauce has actually got quite a high alcohol percentage in it for a sauce.
Right.
So it's like, it's like a thing that shouldn't even be a thing effectively. It's like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And if it helps with the flavor, it's a completely understandable reason why you've done it. Because as we've kind of already discussed, so many alcohol-free beers just don't taste great.
That for me is the big one, like the biggest priority.
Yeah.
It's got to be creating like great tasting product. That's how this becomes more acceptable for more people.
Of course, is by
people who've got to choose to come into the category because it's great tasting product.
Yeah. Now, what does, when you say unfiltered lager, what does unfiltered actually mean?
So one of the key so if you go back 30 or 40 years, the idea of filtered lager became really fashionable. And there was even something, do you remember Holsten triple filtered?
Yes.
Which is kind of ironic. So they actually marketed a process triple filtered. What filtration does is it removes tiny sediment out of a product. And that's, those sediments are like little yeast sediments and hop sediments and barley sediments. But the key thing that it does is it allows you, there's a process called lagering or conditioning, which is where your lager should sit in tank at a very, very low temperature and the sediment will drop out naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, sitting in the tank for time is, like, from a big brewer's perspective, is costing them money.
Yeah.
So they all started filtering it because it meant you could shorten the brewing time. But actually, there's so much flavor that's wrapped up. So when you filter it, you know, you're passing it through a very, very fine, you know, whatever you call it.
Like a gaze.
You actually put in some findings which actually collect all the sediment and then drop it down.
Okay.
But you are, you know, you're taking out a whole load of flavor from the beer. And when I was developing Lucky Saint, we, like, the unfiltered piece wasn't, like, it wasn't part of the brief, but it was, we'd started work on it, and I was working with this amazing brewery in Germany where we still brew today. And all of the original batches that we brewed, they were like good, but I never felt like they really moved the game on from stuff I could find elsewhere. Yeah, it was in the good, but it wasn't a step up. And so I was then tasting all of the non-alcoholic wheat beers. And I don't know if you've tried things like Erdinger, there's loads more in Germany if you like wheat beer, they're really, really good. But they've got this amazing body to them and then you hold them up to the light and they're hazy and unfiltered. And it just it just struck me. It was like, hang on a minute. It just looks like there's so much flavor and body wrapped up in that like hazy liquid. And then we came to this idea, well, why don't we have an unfiltered lager? Because there's, you know, alcohol-free beer struggles for flavor and body. At their worst, they're like, you know, they're weak and watery and thin. So that was the idea behind it. So, and it was the big kind of eureka moment where I got that first samples through of an unfiltered beer, and it's pretty damn close to what, you know, like you say, you have today. And that was the kind of like, I think, you know, we've done it and we're ready.
So
we leave it unfiltered. Very long way of saying we leave it unfiltered because it retains more flavor and body in the beer.
Now, the next like geeky question I have is, how do you effectively then burn off the alcohol, or how is the alcohol removed? I'm presuming it is like an alcoholic beer at some point.
Yeah, so there's two ways of brewing an alcohol-free beer. You can either brew to a very, very low alcohol, or you can brew to a full strength and then remove the alcohol. And I did, funny enough, when I was working in the UK, I worked with four breweries brewing to a low alcohol. And the principle of what you do there is the amount of malt that you put in at the beginning of a brew determines how much alcohol there is in the end product, because the sugar comes from the malt, and then the sugar is fermented and turned into the alcohol. So if you want to produce a really low alcohol beer, you don't put much malt in, so there's not much sugar, and therefore that doesn't convert to much alcohol. Now, there are some nuances around that and some other things that you can do, but that's the basic principle. And we always, what I just continually came up against, I was always, this was always about brewing like the classic, a classic alcohol-free lager.
Mm.
And with a small amount of malt at the beginning, you just, we just never got any, nearly enough flavor into it, and never got close to good results. So you then end up having to kind of add lots of new world hops in to kind of create something with flavor in it, but then it stops being the lager that you intended it to be in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
So that's like brewing to a low alcohol. So that was, so then I, after four rounds of development with four different breweries, like decided, okay, let's go look at these removal processes. So we now use a process called vacuum distillation.
That sounds
which
good.
Which is where you brew, yeah. Which is where you can, so the alcohol, you can evaporate alcohol off finished beer. So we brew a 5% beer, and water obviously evaporates at 100 degrees C, but alcohol evaporates at just under 80 degrees C.
Mm-hmm.
So if you raise the temperature of beer to 80 degrees C, the alcohol will evaporate off and you'll be left with an alcohol-free beer. But the problem is that if you've raised a beer to that temperature, it tastes pretty damned awful afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's distorted all of the flavors, it's burnt, it's horrendous. It's what alcohol-free beer tasted like in the sort of 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. If you can change, this is a geeky bit, if you change the atmospheric pressure around a liquid, you can change the evaporation point. So you know,
cool.
Like in the mountains.
Yeah.
If you know, in the mountains, the kettle boils at 95 because of the lower pressure.
Yeah.
Effectively, what we're doing is like turbocharging that process. So
cool.
we can reduce the evaporation point of alcohol from 80 degrees C to 40 degrees C in a super powerful vacuum.
And then that obviously means that the flavor is not going to be affected because it's not been heated to such a high temperature.
Exactly.
That's
so cool. it's a full on piece of equipment that doesn't exist in the UK and was the reason that I ended up in Germany as part of that, as part of the development, because it's a technology that's more available over there than it is over here.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's cool. That is cool. It's just kind of it, the way you explain it actually just is very logical. But there's a lot of, you know, I completely can understand how there's so much sort of a process that goes into that. So that, and then I'd imagine it's just a case of refining, tweaking, editing, and eventually you get a product which you're happy with.
Yeah. And the thing from a sort of like from a brewing perspective is you don't, your beer that you brew to begin with, you need to take account of the fact that it's going to be going through this process at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the product is slightly, it's not what you're aiming for at the 5% beer, let's say, that you produce.
Mm.
What you're aiming for there isn't necessarily what you'd be aiming for in a normal 5% beer.
Yeah, I get you.
Because it's going to be then subjected to another process. But what we do is like the way that Lucky Saints brewed is still, it adheres to like some of, I think, like the world's highest standards of lager brewing. So it's, mm-hmm. It's brewed in accordance with German purity law. It's brewed, there's just the four ingredients that you're supposed to find in lager. There's no flavorings, there's no additives. And then it takes 6 weeks to brew. So there's 2 weeks of fermentation and then 4 weeks of lagering.
Okay.
Which is a really long time.
Yeah.
In a world where some of the like macro brewers will be brewing in as little as 3 days we're there for like 6 weeks. But it's where all of the magic happens in brewing is, you know, it is in the ingredients that you use and then the amount of time that you give to lager the beer.
It makes complete sense to me. I really enjoy baking. I went on this amazing baking school thing when I lived in London at a place called E5, which is an amazing bakery. If you are ever in East London near, I don't think where it is now, East London, Victoria Parkway, it's that kind of side of London. And they do this incredible baking school. And me and my partner went there. I did it as a birthday present for her. And we made like focaccia, a sourdough, like a rye bread, like bagels. It's all about the process and the time that you leave the dough so that the yeast matures effectively and makes the dough correctly. So completely get it. And that, like, it's even things to like when you're producing a sourdough, having a starter that's like very, very old, which has had all of that time to allow it to become something so flavorsome. And you contrast that kind of bread to a loaf of bread you buy in the shop, and it's night and day. It's completely different. It's not comparable. It's not comparable at all. So I completely understand the time side of it, but my God, 6 weeks must get frustrating at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's built into, you know, it's built into the process, and the only thing is you definitely can't, you know, that means we've got a sort of pretty much an 8 week lead time on product.
Yeah.
So it's we have to plan ahead a little bit, but that's right.
No, cool. So we kind of covered it a little bit earlier, but how do you think that this market has changed so much in the last couple of years?
I guess what I've seen is just this consumer. So that, you know, anecdotally, the consumers I'm closest to, like my mates, have gone from 4 years ago, I suspect, like laughing behind my back and like sniggering, to now being like, oh yeah, no, I'm actually drinking alcohol-free beer on, you know, it's my weeknight beer now. I've actually even closer than that, I've got some investors who, you know, one or two of them, two of them I can think of immediately, having been investors for some time in our business, have then over the last 18 months been like, it's a really good beer. I've started drinking it a lot. So to the point where, like, you know, one of them's like, I don't drink full strength lager anymore. I just drink, like you say, because it gives me everything that I want from a lager experience, which is not the booze part of it anyway.
So
I guess, like, anecdotally, the consumer's definitely moved on. What we see, I guess, like talking to customers, is just so much more acceptance and like interest in the category and wanting to do, you know, wanting to provide a really good offer.
Yeah, when you and I talked about doing a podcast a while ago, we sort of started loosely talking a bit about the mental health and the physical health side of it as well. And I really can tap into that massively. As I earlier mentioned, like, I used to work in a bar in East London when I was studying, and it was just, that was a big thing that put me off drinking. And if I'm perfectly honest, the other thing that really put me off drinking was both of my parents drink way too much. And they are better than they were, but as a kid, having two parents that would drink quite a lot is quite hard to deal with. My dad's definitely not as bad as my mum. Both my parents are split up. They haven't been together since I was very, very young. But my dad's definitely not as bad as my mum. My mum, she won't listen to this, so I can say it. She, when we were younger, definitely, you know, was probably in a pretty bad place in terms of drink. And that, as a kid, and I'm talking like, you know, early teens, is when you don't even know really who you are as a person still. it's really, really hard to know how to deal with that. And, you know, thankfully she's much better now than she was. And both my parents definitely are. My dad still likes to have a beer. He's, you know, he's a big, big Northern guy. He loves to have a beer and that's fine. But there was definitely points as a kid growing up where it was, you know, it's hard. It was really hard to deal with that and caused me much more stress than I probably should have had at points. And I think as well, on the mental health side of it, like I see more negatives of me drinking than positives. And what I mean by that is if I go out, I haven't been out, but obviously it's a bit of a different situation over the last couple of years. But if I was to go out and, you know, get pretty drunk, I might have a great night, but then I feel shit the next day, whether that's hungover, just down. Normally the big thing for me is I just felt like I'd wasted a day. And that I really don't like that as a thought process. And that's kind of why I think the combination of all those things. And then when I was like 18, I lived the furthest away from town. So I was the person who drove in. So it kind of like was never that much of a thing anyway to drink. But I think anyway, because of all those different things, you know, my parents and working in a bar and how I've seen it affected me, that really was a very clear switch to not drink. When I worked in architecture, there was definitely, if you didn't drink, it was weird. It was really frowned upon and really weird. But the industry, when I was in it and how I perceived it, was quite backwards and quite old fashioned. And there was a lot of pressure to go out and drink after work or to drink with clients and stuff. And I did not, that time for me in my life was a very bad time mentally and physically, in fact. Like, you know, I was traveling quite a lot with work. I put on a lot of weight, couldn't really exercise, spent half of my life on a flight somewhere. And just got really depressed, really, really depressed. And that was like, I remember there basically, I did the first like kind of big charity challenge I did for PACE, which was 107 kilometers every day for 107 days. I did that while working at a design firm. And I remember when I finished that challenge, I went into the office and I was literally handed my notice in straight away. I was like, I'm done. And my director was like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm not going to do this anymore, because I very, very literally, I was at that point where it was like, I quit being me in whatever context that means, or I quit this job. You know, that's how it, that's how blunt it was. It was that black and white. It was something has to give. And I think I made the right decision by choosing the job was the thing that had to give. And, you know, I don't know the science about it or behind it so much, but I perceive that a lot of alcohol or alcoholic drinks are not good for your mental health from my experiences. I don't know the sciences. I don't know if it's genuinely true, but for me, that's 100% how it feels.
I think most people would struggle to disagree with that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of, we get lots of amazing emails and reviews quite a few of them talk about the impact and the positive impact that Lucky Saint and Alcohol Free Beers had on their lives and their relationship with alcohol. So that's always, it's an amazing, and to be honest, like slightly unintended, like, or unexpected consequence of what we're doing, is to receive like these kind of amazing pieces of people reaching out to us. There's also, I always love looking on the kind of the positive impact of things. And I was, so kind of like in 2018, so this was before even launched Lucky Saint, I was still in a job, but on the verge of about to quit a secure job and launch into the unknown. And one of the things I thought, I was like trying to control control the things I can control and give myself the best possible chance. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm definitely going to do dry January in 2018. And then I did dry January, and I thought at the end of it, I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll do 3 months. And then I got to the end of 3 months, and I thought, well, maybe I'll try and do it a year. And really the kind of the continuing motivation to keep going each time was to try and keep my productivity up as a founder trying to start a new business, remove some of the, you know, hangover anxieties that and uncertainty. So it was, yeah. And then I think in reality I got to the end of a year, and actually I'd overcome all the hard bits around not drinking. You've overcome, you know, most of them, it's the social ones.
Yeah.
So, and you get, and, you know, you've done weddings and festivals, and actually you figure out that you can, you know, you get your coping mechanisms, as it were, and you understand what you know, what drinks you need to have on hand, and how to sort of, you know, keep morale up, and how much coffee you need to drink, and all of that stuff. Yeah, it's been really good. I think the other thing, right, coming back to mental health, is we as a business, we've had this kind of amazing kind of journey over the last 12 months of mental health, because we decided kind of about this time a year ago, a little bit less, about 9 months ago, that we wanted to do as a team, we wanted to do mental health first aid training and put some mental health first aiders into our business.
That's amazing.
Do you know about mental health first aid? So it's like physical first aid, but it gives the people who are trained the tools to kind of spot and then approach people who might be struggling with mental health and be able to point them in the right direction. It's not, you definitely don't become therapists or anything like that, but it's a 2-day course, and we did it with an amazing guy called Harry Corrin. And 9 of us did it, so we were doing a third of our team at that point, and it was such a profound experience. I think I hadn't really expected just it to be quite so impactful, really challenging in some ways. I'd lost a friend to suicide just over 2 years ago, and you know, it's hard, to be honest, like learning all of the things that you didn't know to know.
Yeah, I know.
So super challenging from that perspective, but also like amazing in terms of realizing the small positive things that you can do to positively impact your own mental health. Amazing experience as a team. And then we got chatting, Emma, our MD, and I were like chatting to Harry, and that conversation just continued after we'd finished the course with him. And we did a couple of things. One, we were like, we want the whole team to be trained, because this is it's been such an amazing experience. So we've done that. But then Harry's now joined our business, and we've now got this initiative where we've partnered with Mental Health First Aid England, and we're training people within hospitality and retail. So we go into our customers and we offer mental health first aid training to them in their businesses. So this year we're going to train hundreds of people, but the amazing bit is that the hundreds of people that we train will touch thousands of people. Because, you know, Mental Health First Aid England they want 1 in 10 people in the workforce to be trained, because that's enough to touch, you know, then everyone should be in touch with someone. So we've got, funnily enough, we've launched it. Our first training is actually happening today. It's with Honest Burgers.
Amazing.
So we're training 16 people there today and tomorrow. So it's something that's kind of really close to my heart, and I guess there's a very natural, like, Harry's personal story is an amazing one, but he was we ended up working with him because he'd had a period where he knew that alcohol wasn't positive for his mental health at a particular moment in time, and actually ended up drinking a lot of Lucky Saint for a 3-month period at the beginning of last year. So there's this kind of quite natural fit in terms of like the, I guess, the positive impact that drinking a bit more moderately sometimes can have on you.
And like for you to be doing that as a business is incredible. There's, I think that there's the mental health thing, it's definitely getting more normalized. Yeah. And, you know, I do a lot of work with Movember, and Movember provide me with a lot of training tools and information and advice on how to deal with people that would reach out to me. And similarly to you, I lost a friend to suicide. I've lost a couple of friends to suicide, actually, if I'm perfectly honest. And knowing that as a situation, as a person to deal with, is hard because you don't know what you don't fully understand the situation. I know one of my friends that was one of my best friends, and the problem I had was always questioning why and not knowing why, and having known him as a person from the age of 6, knowing that he was a very lively and, you know, happy on the face of it person, and then trying to understand the why was something that I dealt with for a long time and really struggled to get around with, and slowly sort of became to accept. But the, you know, that happened 7 years ago, you know, it's quite a while ago, that one. And was a thing that kind of ate away at our close group of mates for a long time. And Movember sort of helped us quite a lot with the support on that. And that's why I have the relationship I have with Movember, was from that situation. And what has been very noticeable, I think, in the last couple of years is that mental health is actually being more actively talked about, and it's normalizing it as a thing, not being that whole like, I'll just man up or whatever it is. There's actually like, people are starting to understand it, and you to be doing that as a business and going out there and actively reaching out to other businesses. And as you say, one person touches 100 people, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. It's really, really fantastic.
The conversation around mental health is such a good one. I still think it's something that lots of people don't find, but it's still not approachable.
Yeah.
So for lots of people, they hear the conversation going on around them, but still don't really know how to, don't understand or know how to kind of engage themselves in it. And I think it was a real, like, so personally, like, doing mental health first aid training was like, was a bit of a breakthrough, well, like a massive breakthrough for me. Because it started to put something a bit more tangible around it, and actually spending 2 days like actually fully immersing yourself in it and understanding it, both from a like personal perspective, but then like on the impact it's having on other people as well. That's why I'm so excited about the work that we're doing. Because it's giving people tools, and actually it's giving people a way to fully engage in it.
A guy that is like a mentor to me. He used to be a lecturer, my lecturer, in fact, when I studied, and now he's like a bit of a mentor to me. One of the things he always said to me was, he's like, because he's a very like positive person, but has his struggles. And one of the things he always said to me was like, you know that a simple smile can change someone's day. And I was like, it's very true. It's very true. Something as simple as that. And no, I didn't realize that Lucky Saint were doing that. And that honestly is amazing. It's such an incredible thing to be doing. And as you're completely right, a lot of people hear the conversation from the outside and don't go into the conversation. Everyone I guarantee that everyone has had something. There can't be a person who's not had a point in their lives where something's happened and they've not sure what the level it is, but something's happened and has really challenged them. And I'm a firm believer in the more that we start to open the discussion, like I try to be very honest and open about things myself, and the more we can talk about it, and people who have some form of influence or our business can talk about it, the more it starts to become better. I completely agree. We're still on the periphery of it, but we're closer to the periphery than we were 5 years ago.
Oh, like 100%. And every conversation that is had on mental health is a positive thing.
Mm.
You know, if it encourages one more person to engage and talk more, you know, that's a hugely positive thing.
Yeah, I really agree.
So it's if we can all talk about our mental health as much as we talk about our physical health, then we do. Perth is a business, actually. We have all of our like one-to-one meetings, so between that manager and the direct reports, it's quite a formulaic setup. The first thing always discussed is how's your physical health and how's your mental health.
Nice.
It's like just to try on a weekly basis, just to check in and see how people are.
Mm. I think it's lovely to hear. Like, I don't think I've ever worked in a company in the past that ever did that. Especially in the architecture days, that was never, you know, you'd be expected to be in the office. I'm sure I've mentioned it before in other episodes of the podcast. I very much remember days being told, if you leave the office before me, you're sacked. And if you genuinely, and if you aren't in before me, don't bother coming in. Because there was the problem I found with that industry was there's someone else who will always have your job, first of all. You know, there's always someone that would want it. And I was very lucky to work with some very incredible design firms. But the problem was, is there was this mentality of like the senior person had been treated that way. So that was how it was then passed on. And it was passed on and it was passed on. And when I, you know, when I got, say, slightly more senior, I didn't do that because I just didn't think it was right. And people thought it was weird. And I was like, well, I was talked to like a piece of shit. So I don't want to talk to someone else like a piece of shit because I know how it made me feel, you know. And as it's just quite an old-fashioned industry. There was never that like, how are you thing, are you all right?
Yeah.
It was always a, can you do that for me now? I need it yesterday. That was it. And
yeah,
that grinds on you after a while, you know, it really grinds on you after a while. So, I mean, 100%. I'd like to hope that more businesses are starting to do this, like mental health training that you're talking about. And I really hope it's starting, does become something that really does happen, like much more than just every now and then the odd bit of like nod to it that the HR person does in a business, which is not enough.
It's a wellness week. But there's 51 others.
exactly that. You can't like I said to you before we were recording, you can't, in the discussion of a challenge I'm going to do later this year, which I'm not going to publicly say yet, it's something that happens at any point, any day of the week, night or day. It's something that people have to deal with. And on the subject of changing the subject slightly, because I think we might end up, we're going to end up, we could talk about this, I feel like, for a long time. I wanted to talk about the physical side of it as well. And what I mean on this is it does relate to the mental health side of it, actually, is I used to go for a ride with this club based in Surrey called Ripcore. And they are a there was the first like cycling club I ever rode with. I lived in East London at this point. I was driving over to Surrey to go ride with them. So my I first had this connection with Ripcord because they have a really good connection with Pace. And I got very, and one of my schoolmates used to ride with them, also kind of had a good connection with Pace. And that's kind of how I guess in a way, kind of got into cycling a bit more. And so that's definitely how I started fundraising for Pace. And the first challenge I ever did was with Ripcord, and it was riding across Romania. And we rode across Romania from like the northwest to the southeast, because Pace were helping sort of fund a school out there for kids with motor-based disorders. So there was a really nice connection to it. So we rode across it. So anyway, with this Ripcord, they were a club. Well, they are still a club. I get membership every year, which is really lovely. Get a nice little member card, turn up. Not that I've not been on a club ride for a very, very long time. And they're a club of, you know, very much middle-aged men. You know, they're kind of like, they all love a drink, they love a meal, really good guys. And there was one of the best things I had from riding with those guys was the after ride, sitting in a pub and having a drink. I didn't drink at this point, but that social connection after a ride, having a drink, and the kind of almost endorphin rush and chat afterwards. Now, this is going back quite a few years. And then coming on from that, then the pub we used to go to started stocking, I think it was like Heineken or Beck's or something, like a 0% one. So I'd have that. And I think what I think is quite nice about an alcoholic free beer is you still kind of get that nice, warm, fuzzy feeling after something like a big ride. I think so. And whether that's actually like, I presume there's some proof in the pudding of that, but.
So there's some science behind it. Yeah, there's some science behind it.
Oh, good.
because you get an endorphin, like you always think about like the first sip of a beer. It's like the one that, you know, hits the back of the throat and it gives you that, it gives you the little endorphin rush. And we all associate that with, that's, you know, it's the first hit of alcohol, but actually scientifically alcohol has no impact on you for 20 minutes.
Mm.
So it doesn't reach your bloodstream. It doesn't have any impact on the body.
Yeah.
So actually that's all mental.
Yeah.
Right. So that what we think about is that, like, you know, the first, you know, first half a pint that you drink, that's all a mental thing. So actually, so alcohol free beer should deliver all of that, because you're in the window before alcohol takes any effect anyway.
Makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, the other thing as well, I guess, for people who are conscious, is there's not really much calories in this. You know, some people are quite, that alcohol does generally have quite a lot of calories in it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So all of the calories, is, so we talked about the like production process earlier and how you remove the alcohol. The alcohol comes from the sugar.
Yeah.
And the sugar has come from the malted barley. But we go through this process where the sugar is super calorific. It then converts to alcohol, and that's really calorific. And then we remove the alcohol. Mm-hmm. So you end up, so alcohol-free beers, but like, well, our beer is like a third the calories of a full strength beer. So it makes perfect sense why it is low in calories when you think about like just how the way that it's brewed and calorific content comes from.
Yeah, makes complete sense. And then what's kind of next for Lucky Saint? What's coming up? What have you got? What can you share, I should say, for 2022? I nearly got the year wrong for a second then.
No, so 2022, I think everyone always expects us to have like news on a new product, but like one of our mantras is do one thing well. Yeah. So it's like we're super focused on brewing the best lager humanly possible and sticking to our knitting in that respect. Mm. Although, never say never, because that's a dangerous game.
Yeah, of course.
So, like, most exciting stuff, we've talked about, like, the mental health stuff, which, I just think it's an amazing piece of work that I said is, like, only kicked off today. So I remain, like, so excited about where that takes us. And then the other really big thing that I think is going to go much broader this year is draft.
Mm.
So alcohol-free beer on draft is, in a way, it's like the last hurdle that sits between making all beers of all ABVs are equal.
Yeah.
once they're all on draft and they all sit, you can have everything on tap, and then you can stand with your mates and have a pint. So that's, for me, like, I think from a consumer perspective, that's that's the last big thing that we need to knock over.
Because you've done bottles, you've done cans.
We've done bottles, done cans. So those are the kind of the easy ones. And I love the bottle is like my icon product, if you see what I mean. I just love the bottle shape. But draft is where I'd like to see the category grow massively. I'd like to see Lucky Saint on tap in hundreds and thousands of pubs across the UK. That's where, I think we'll start really making an impact on, we've talked earlier about this kind of the changing consumer habits and our attitudes towards alcohol. Mm. And, the pub and the pint is something that's so ingrained in our society. But actually with it on draft, I think that begins to change really quickly. And
Massively so. It becomes more of a normalised pint, And it becomes that thing about feeling a bit, judged or something for having an alcohol-free option. If it's in a pint glass, literally you can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
And
that's where, and then we get back to this brilliant thing of the greatest reward of drinking is a social connection, because it literally is like we're all there having a pint, and it's all about who you're having it with and conversations that you're having and the moments that you're having.
Yeah, exactly. I have two more questions for you. I've meant to ask for a long time and I kept forgetting to ask. And then every time I look over, I realize that I haven't asked it yet. Why the ladybird?
Oh, ladybirds are lucky if they land on you.
Ah, okay. I like that.
And actually, amazingly, so going all the way back to August 2018, so this is before we'd launched, it was the night before. So I'd had this like serendipitous introduction to the founder of Honest Burgers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to a recruiter who was helping me hire a salesperson, and she was patiently teasing out of me what sort of salesperson I was looking for. And I said, well, if there was a burger chain, Lucky Saint should be listed in Honest Burgers because of what they stand for in terms of quality.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, you're not going to believe it, but Tom, the founder, was my best man at my wedding and I'm having dinner with him tonight. Like,
amazing.
Would you like an intro? So I was like, obviously, like, amazing. And met him the next week. And I can't remember why I'm telling this story now. What was the question again?
About the ladybird.
Oh, the lady. So the night before I met Tom, I was hand labeling bottles of Lucky Saint. They weren't different bottle shape, it was basically a sample batch that I'd run. And I was hand labeling, and literally there is on the front label, there's this ladybird here. This ladybird here, in that spot there didn't used to be a ladybird there, and I was sitting there one night and the ladybird literally came and landed in that exact position on the label. I've got a photo of it. So anyway, I thought, well, that's a good omen. And then I met Tom from Honest the next day, and he loved the beer and said he put it in all his restaurants, and that became, and he was our first customer.
Amazing. That's a lovely story to why the ladybird then. I like that one. And my last question, which is, I guess I did pre-warn you, and I don't always pre-warn people.
I've forgotten what you pre-warned me.
I also get told off if I don't ask this question, and it is basically asking for 5 life hacks or tips. The reaction.
Head in my hands.
The reason for 5 is because 3 is quite easy. Then the 4th and 5th one are normally really good. But to give you some, I'll give you some context and examples that I've had previously.
No, wait. If you give me all the examples, then I can't claim them as my own.
Okay, I won't give you any examples then.
No. Go ahead.
One of them, which was done by my mate Dov, who runs Parkour's Wheels, was to, when you're cooking, I love cooking, when you're cooking, put all your spices in the pan and just cook them off quickly on their own for a little bit. Never did that before because it opens up the flavors in them.
Cooking's opened up a whole raft of new life hacks.
There you go.
If we split it into the 3 and the 2, like you said, there's got to be like one around like moderate drinking, right?
Yeah.
So that's number one. And for lots of people, that'd be, you know, not drinking 3 or 4 nights a week, whatever it is. But I think there's a piece around that. I think that's a good life hack. I think I get more energy out of having done exercise than I have to put into it.
I agree with that.
That's number 2. Number 3, the biggest realization for me, like before I launched Lucky Saint, was I was in a job that I wasn't passionate about. And then I met 2 founders of a technology business, and it was a concept stage, and they were so passionate and so driven about what they were doing. And I looked at them and thought, I'm doing the wrong thing. If I'm not that excited and that passionate and that driven about what I'm doing, then I'm in the wrong place. That'd be my number 3. You've got to do something you believe in. Life's too short to not do stuff that, you know, gives you a buzz. I'm now madly trying to think of my cooking hack.
You've basically like set it up that you've got some great cooking tips, and you might don't step over the hurdle. You need to properly gallop over this hurdle.
So, look, my favorite food, I've probably eaten it once a week for the last 25 years, is lemon pasta.
Lemon pasta. Oh, lemon.
yeah. Lemon pasta. And half lemon juice, half olive oil, handful of Parmesan pasta, Parmesan cheese, in a jam jar, shake it up, lots of basil. Best thing ever.
I know what I'm cooking tonight, but that might be tomorrow night's dinner.
That's so good. I've got to get to number 5. Chris, this is hard.
It is hard, isn't it?
You're gonna have to edit out the gaps here.
Think about what about something in the term? I mean, you've given us a great sort of cooking one. How about, there's got to be another cooking one. There must be. Also, I did think you were going to turn around and say something I've had for the last, you know, every week for like the last 25 years is a Greg's sausage roll. That's what I thought you were going to say, something like that.
No, I tell you what my last one will be, because it's kind of ironic. For the last year, every day for the last year, apart from I've drunk Moju. Do you know Moju?
Yeah.
A little shot. You can buy them in dosing bottles so that you don't consume quite so much plastic.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced they're so good for your immunity.
Yeah.
So like haven't just every time you get like you think you're getting a cold or whatever, you have it just comes and goes and you shake it off. And I also haven't had COVID.
There you go.
And I've been out and about and then 1 week, so I was away for a week over New Year, didn't take Moju. Got back from skiing in Switzerland. PCR test, ding, got COVID. So the only week in the last year that I haven't taken it, I caught the COVID.
There you go.
So I'm back on it now.
So I really like Moju as a brand. I think they're cool. The product's nice. I actually make ginger shots myself.
Yeah,
it's so easy.
Better.
It's so easy.
Is it?
Yeah, ginger.
Yeah, lemon. I take the vitamin D ones, which have got ginger and turmeric, and then
a
bunch of other. I don't know where vitamin D comes from, but it sounds like it's really good for me.
Yeah, they look like they're going to be good for you, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. It's the same with like if you have a smoothie, the green one's going to be the one that's the best for you because it's green.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't matter what's in it.
I love it.
It's green.
No, I love it. Coffee and Moju in the morning is a pretty good wake up.
Yeah, you know the other thing I do is I every day. So I the ginger shots I tend to do them when I'm not. Similarly, if I'm feeling a bit run down, that's what I do. But I have every day, like whether it's an Actimel, a Yakult, whatever it is, one of those things. And the reason why I do is I am a bit lactose intolerant and I am adamant, similarly to you, that they help with me with like just stomach aches and stuff like that. I'm adamant about
that.
I don't know if they do.
Interesting.
Could be absolute bollocks, but it's like I think I've done it for probably about 5 years, pretty much every day. And they taste quite nice as well.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's... Anyway.
I think, I'll do Moju, my number five.
That's a good one.
Love it.
Yeah. Thank you, Luke, so much for your time and talking crap with me it's 5 o'clock. We've been chatting for a while. Before
it's
recording.
Been an absolute pleasure.
I'll give you a quick teaser of this current situation right now.
Oh, so cute.
Yes.
Fast asleep?
He's woken up. He had like some crazy eye thing going. He was asleep. He did settle down and now he's just chilling now, young Marshall. Snores like a trooper and shits like one too. On that note,
Chris, such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and have a good rest of your. I don't even know what day we're on. Tuesday evening.
Yeah, two more days of isolation.
Count them down.
Yeah, exactly.